This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Today on FCA Answers Debriefing, the Coast Guard CIO. The conversation starts right now. I'm Max Kakis with FCA International. Welcome to FCA Answers. In just a few months, a new man will be at the helm as the Coast Guard's Chief Information Officer. That's because Rear Admiral Bob Day will be retiring and ending a 34-year-long career in the Coast Guard, his final posting as the Coast Guard's Chief Information Officer, and also the Commander of Coast Guard Cyber Command, positions he's held since July 2009. Admiral Day joins us today in the studio. Admiral, I want to welcome you to FCA Answers and the studios here at Federal News Radio, and I want to congratulate you on your impending retirement.
Thanks, Max. It's been a great run here, and I'm ready to turn it over to Rear Admiral Marshall Lytle, who will take command on the 16th of May.
Wow. And I'm wondering, Admiral, as you look back on the last 5 years or so, how would you characterize the state of Coast Guard IT as you conclude your tenure? Talk to us a little bit about how IT works in terms of the mission of the Coast Guard and how it supports what the Coast Guard does in terms of maritime safety.
Well, this is really my 32nd straight year of being in the IT business. And I've got to watch these transitions from the 80s to the 90s to where we are today. And last week was the state of the Coast Guard address given by the Commandant. And if I had to kind of sum up the state of the Coast Guard from an IT perspective, I'd say we're at a very challenging inflection point for IT. And I think that's being experienced throughout the entirety of federal government. And there's a couple reasons why. One of it is obviously the budget situations we find ourselves in a declining budget environment. But also the fact that the demand for IT has probably never been greater. Mm-hmm. That's a very complex situation when you have both of these factors going together.
Sure.
When you say IT in terms of mission impact, I would also say that at no time in the Coast Guard's history has IT been more important to mission execution. And I can give you plenty of examples of exactly that. Literally, we've just deployed a system called Rescue 21, mm-hmm. which has been in the works for 10 or 15 years, and we're starting to finish that program out. And again, this is a highly technology-intensive system that is really taking what we call the search out of search and rescue by leveraging various different capabilities of direction finding, playback recordings, all these different technologies, all IP-based. We are really literally taking the search out of search and rescue and seeing increased mission performance in terms of lives saved, property saved, and that's translating right there. When you move over into the missions of counter-narcotics and migrant interdiction, leveraging technology systems that are putting the intelligence right from the shore, right aboard the ship, through connectivity, through command and control systems, we're literally taking the search out of that as well. Mm-hmm. If I go back and I think about my days on the ship back in the 1980s, where we'd sit in the Mona Pass and just kind of look at vessels going back and forth and saying, which one should we board? Now we have more intelligence that's delivered to those operational commanders out there at the pointy end than they can possibly prosecute, mm-hmm. Because we have so much better systems to get it there.
So would it be fair to say that IT has been a mission enabler and maybe a mission enhancer for the Coast Guard?
No, there's no doubt about it. And if you take a look at the technical complexity of the ships and the aircraft that we're delivering and building now, really, they're very IT-centric. I mean, from the main propulsion control systems all the way up through the advanced communication systems that we're using, So let me just put it in a context. Today, a Coast Guard cutter will probably get underway with only one main diesel engine out of there, too. If their SATCOM systems are down and they don't have their connectivity back to mm-hmm. the intelligence systems, to the mission systems, they pretty much declare themselves as not mission capable. That's a interesting paradigm, shift from what I saw back in the 80s to where we are today. They are that dependent on those technology systems.
It's the equivalent of being becalmed back in the day when the Coast Guard cutters were sailing vessels, the Eagle, cutters that depended on engines. If you didn't have your engines, you couldn't sail.
Yeah, it really is an interesting inflection point. So now let me just take another little spin on that. So, okay, we've made ourselves highly dependent on these systems, and now let me put my cyber commander hat on. And now that puts a whole nother inflection point and emphasis as we're dependent on these systems. The threat to those systems from a cyber nexus could potentially take those core capabilities out. We better start thinking about what's the contingency plan? How do we operate back in the environment when maybe these systems are in a denied state?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've lost that expertise, and we're going to have to get back and exercise that on a regular basis.
Right. Admiral, I wanted to ask you, we've got about a minute or so left in this section of the show. March 2013 edition of Signal Magazine, our colleagues over at Signal described SeaWatch, the new system that ties together sensors and communications for cutters. What do you think about SeaWatch as perhaps one of your legacies as the Coast Guard CIO?
Well, it's not necessarily my legacy, though I've championed this program all the way along and worked particularly hard with our acquisitions folks to integrate this system. The bottom line behind SeaWatch is we've taken commercial off-the-shelf and government off-the-shelf capabilities and forged it with the expertise the Coast Guard has, particularly in situational awareness and navigation systems, our SeaWatch-Vega combination. Vega is a navigation program that we've used for a long time. Believe it or not, the Coast Guard has been experts in electronic charting and navigation systems for many, many years. SeaWatch was just this next evolution. SeaWatch is being used aboard our FRCs, is also being put on our legacy cutters, and now is specified as the system of record for our new OPC cutter. It's an amazing program.
Well, hold that thought, Admiral. We'll come back to that in a moment. Still to come, fitting cyber into the maritime protection mission. You're listening to AFCEA Answers on Federal News Radio.
AFCEA has been the association for global security since 1946. Experience AFCEA in action at its upcoming events. Coast Guard Intelligence Industry Day, April 2nd. Navy Information Dominance Day, May 7th. The Joint Information Enterprise Mission Partner Symposium, May 12th to 14th. And the Acquisition Research Symposium, May 14th to 15th. Many of AFCEA's events offer continuing education to help you maintain professional certifications. Stay in the know with AFCEA's international journal, Signal Magazine. The March issue focuses on homeland security, Europe, and NATO. Further your education by taking advantage of Carnegie Mellon Software Engineering Institute's Step Forward Training Package that includes 36 cybersecurity courses. Support AFCEA's STEM efforts by sponsoring a scholarship or joining AFCEA's Cycle for STEM team. Learn more and join today at AFCEA.org. That's AFCEA.org.
Welcome back to AFCEA Answers on Federal News Radio. Our guest today is Coast Guard Rear Admiral Bob Day, the Chief Information Officer for the Coast Guard and the Commander of the Coast Guard Cyber Command. Admiral, you alluded to this a little while ago, and I wanted to come back to cybersecurity. Big challenge for the military, the government, also industry, the private sector as well. After 5 years on the job, and in particular with the Chief of Coast Guard Cyber Command in your portfolio, what would you say is the state of cybersecurity right now as it relates to your job, as it relates to the mission of the Coast Guard? Because one of the favorite sayings that we hear a lot on this show is that cybersecurity is a team sport, and it's not just within a particular agency. It's everybody. It crosses into everything that we do these days.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And in the 5 years, particularly working for General Alexander up at U.S. Cyber Command, my eyes have been opened significantly. And I'm in a lucky position that I am dual-hatted, not only as the CIO and the cyber commander, so I can take what I'm seeing behind the curtain at Cyber Command from the intelligence side and come back and understand the threat vectors and from a business perspective as the CIO. So as, at Coast Guard Cyber Command, we look at cyber in three really different veins. First one is to defend our portion of the dot mil network. So we can, you know that we have system availability, improving our cyber defenses. The next piece that we're looking at is obviously a role of DHS, and this is where I put my DHS hat on, is how do we, as the sector-specific agency for the maritime, how do I look at maritime critical infrastructure? And how do I take those existing relationships that we already have with our partners in the port and help educate them on that same cyber threat that I'm looking at and how they can assess their readiness and their ability to defend their capabilities. And I think that this is just a new area that's just about to explode. Having all the folks coming back from RSA out in San Francisco, where this was a humongous topic and DHS was really out there in force to say, let's figure out how we can do this as a partnership together. And then the third piece from cyber is there's a decision advantage capability. If you don't look at cyber as a new domain, no different than air, space, sea, ground, you know, that we have to operate in and we have to understand what's going on in to help drive our decisions and our mission execution decisions out there and leverage it, you're missing a significant piece. So it's growing those three areas. I'd say I'm getting into a better position of where I want to be on defending my own network. Mm-hmm. And there you're taking a multitude of different capabilities and tools, which we all need to improve on. Improving configuration, understanding where the key terrain is in your, and that's using a warfighting term, where's your key terrain that you need to defend? And then really getting the command and control such that you have the speed of where you see an intrusion that you can get it off of your network in seconds.
Did it help in retrospect that that you were able to be dual-hatted and that you had both of these jobs at the same time and you had being dual-hatted gave you the authority to move quickly when you saw something?
I think it was very, very, very beneficial. Now, again, the Coast Guard is a small organization and we really didn't have the resources to stand up separate entities to do this. And so the way I look at it is I can have an argument with myself and always win because I have to understand the business case. There's things that you want to do and lock things down so tight that it's actually going to impact the mission side of the house so terribly. You have to find that balance. And having both sides of it, I think I'm able to find that balance and bring the whole story to my leadership to explain to them what these things mean and why, as CIO, I have to take actions that I'm going to take.
Sure.
And that's been very beneficial.
Now, on this program, Admiral, your Marine counterpart, General Kevin Nally, gentleman that you know very, very well, we've worked with for years, he expressed some frustration that with the current acquisition rules and regulations, he can't get improvements in IT out to the warfighters quickly enough. Do you share his frustration?
I do. Kevin Nally's a great American, and he and I talk quite a bit. And I think we're all frustrated. Here you have technologies that turn themselves over in sometimes less than 18 months. Mm-hmm. And we have an acquisition cycle that sometimes takes 3 to 4 to 5 years. We have to figure out new ways to streamline the acquisition processes. You know, yes, there are big, big programs that you need to run in very specific manners. But there's also commodity IT that we should be able to pick up very, very quickly and then be able to field it very, very quickly. And so, you know, the FAR and all of the different regulations, they're just not keeping up with the new technologies. There's people out there who are starting to test using agile methods to be able to buy stuff that we're seeing benefits in. We need to get the regulations to go with it, change all those acquisition regulations such that we have that niche that can keep up with what's going to continue to be nothing but an exploding world.
We talked about it in the first segment of the show, Sea Watch, and you said one of the strengths of that program is that it uses a lot of commercial off-the-shelf technology, COTS as it's called. Is that a case where maybe acquisition reform or acquisition modernization could help in terms of being able to speed the use of COTS?
Well, in the case there, that one of the big benefit was is that we were the integrator. And we were able to take best of breed from various different places, use our own engineering as well as engineering that we brought in, but we're able to be our own integrator. And this is the problem area. When you start getting these massive integration contracts, they're very, very hard to award because a lot of people can do them. In this case, we did our own integration, and it's been very beneficial to us. I mean, we were using experience that we've had since 1982. We did our first real electronic navigation system with a program called COMDAC, which I worked on as a lieutenant junior grade. Mm-hmm. And we've learned a lot there. One of the things we learned, do not be on the bleeding edge of technology. If you're on the bleeding edge of technology trying to apply it in, you know, out there in the field, you're going to bleed.
There you go.
Always be about two or three steps behind, and where possible, take that GOTS and that commercial off-the-shelf technology and then integrate it.
All right. Well, still to come, a wish list for the next CG6. You're listening to FCA Answers on Federal News Radio.
FCA has been the association for global security since 1946. Experience FCA in action at its upcoming events. Coast Guard Intelligence Industry Day, April 2nd, Navy Information Dominance Day, May 7th, the Joint Information Enterprise Mission Partner Symposium, May 12th to 14th, and the Acquisition Research Symposium, May 14th to 15th. Many of FCA's events offer continuing education to help you maintain professional certifications. Stay in the know with FCA's international journal, Signal Magazine. The March issue focuses on homeland security, Europe, and NATO. Further your education by taking advantage of Carnegie Mellon Software Engineering Institute's Step Forward Training Package that includes 36 cybersecurity courses. Support FCA's STEM efforts by sponsoring a scholarship or joining FCA's Cycle for STEM team. Learn more and join today at FCEA.org. That's AFCEA.org.
Welcome back to FCA Answers here on Federal News Radio. Now, Admiral Day, last year at the George Mason University C4I FCA Solutions Conference, you said that the joint information environment would solve many key issues that are central to managing IT resources and also helping to deal with all the cybersecurity challenges. Do you still feel that? And what's your current read on the development of the JIE right now?
Well, I still and we've actually made quite a bit of headway since I spoke at that event.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what JIE is going to do. Is it's going to take, you know, all these systems that have been developed over the last two decades and get us back into configuration. That's the first piece. What are the standards that we're going to drive for and federate to?
Mm-hmm.
And that's from a network standpoint. That's from an intrusion detection. I mean, all the key pieces. That's one part of it is let's get it such that, if you need to know your neighborhood if you're going to defend your neighborhood, and if each of your streets in your neighborhood are laid out in different ways, how do you as the beat cop figure out how to go through there? You would rather have a good roadmap of what you're trying to defend. The next point is really gets to the OPM 25-point plan is, does everybody have to have their own data center? Mm-hmm. And, all the different elements to go with it and to consolidate down. It also follows from a cybersecurity standpoint, instead of trying to defend 30 DMZs, why don't we just boil it down to three or four that we can better defend? And so the consolidation piece is also part of that. And from a consolidation, it's not only a consolidation of data centers, it's a consolidation of service. So since we talked at the GMU event, I'm moving over to DISA Enterprise Email as we speak. Mm-hmm. We're starting on the CIPRNet side, and next year we'll start going full bore on our unclassed NIPR side. And this is a transition that's going to take time, and there's still some issues there, particularly how do you do cloud-based email to a Coast Guard cutter operating in the Bering Sea.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to figure out those answers because the Navy needs to figure out those answers as well. But I think this path is moving along quite well. Yes, it's very big. Yes, you're going to have to take it in chunks. Yes, you're going to have to do federated approaches. But meeting with the team on JIE and the architecture that's starting to take shape, I think we're going to be able to move into it quite well and achieve those benefits of configuration management, better defendability, and in some cases, improve services at lower cost.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you touched on my next question here in that response about enterprise email, and that is that one of the biggest challenges for your counterparts in the military services is the desire and also the need to extend full capabilities of the network out to the edge. And you touched on this earlier as well in another one of your responses. How do you describe the effort to try to drive bandwidth to a Coast Guard cutter in the Bering Sea? Is the biggest challenge spectrum, bandwidth, cybersecurity falls into it again as usual, data integrity? What's the big challenge in trying to get that to that last 100 feet to the cutter?
Yeah, it's called physics. No, bandwidth is absolutely one of the key challenges. And, when you're using space-based technology, primarily satellite technology to get there, you're working with physics. And yes, there's been massive improvements, and there are more improvements on the line. I mean, we just recently deployed Ku-band connectivity to all of our cutters, and are seeing, massive, doubling, tripling of the bandwidth capability there, as well as a secondary system with fleet broadband. It's expensive, and that's why it's a secondary system.
Sure.
But we're seeing improvements there, and I know the satellite providers are constantly looking to beef up the speed. But when you're working with people who are getting, 25, 30 megabits into their home from Comcast for $19.95 a month, and they look at you, well, why can't you do that to the cutter? I said, you can if you'd like to tow a reel of fiber optic cable behind you all the way. They understand, but the demand is insatiable. And as we discussed early on in the program, the interdependencies of mission execution with technology means that connectivity needs to be there. The biggest challenge we're dealing with right now as the Arctic continues to open up is the connectivity up there. Even with the geostationary satellites, the coverage up above the Arctic Circle is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
There are experimental capabilities being put into place. The MUOS system is also demonstrating some capability up there, and we need to take advantage of that and work in those areas because we know we're going to be operating up there more often as the ice continues to recede and as exploration continues up there for natural resources, ecotourism.
Sure.
I mean, we're starting to see 5,000-person ships go up into that area. How do you do a search and rescue when you don't have the comms?
Will another satellite maybe positioned over the North Pole perhaps help some of that as well? I've heard them some talk about that. And when I was researching a story for Signal Magazine about Coast Guard operations in the Arctic, there was some talk about that at least 3 years ago.
There are, and again, there's scientific platforms up there that they're repurposing some of the transponders for communications. The other thing is we're leveraging, systems like Iridium and Globalstar, where you mm-hmm. have those non-geostationary. Problem is you don't have that constant contact and or the high bandwidth that you normally get from a major SATCOM system.
Right. Well, along those lines, Admiral, I wanted to give you an opportunity here to talk a little bit about your expectations in terms of the job for your successor as the CIO of the Coast Guard. We talked a little bit about the benefits of being dual-hatted, and I wanted to give you an opportunity as you leave the service to talk about maybe one or two big areas in IT in which you feel that there's still significant need of improvement. Vis-a-vis the mission of the Coast Guard, what area does your service still need some help in?
Well, there's several. I have to go back to cyber because this is the linchpin. It's probably the biggest threat vector we've ever dealt with. We're starting to understand it better, but just when you understand one facet of it, something else pops its head up, and we've got to get out of the game of what we call playing whack-a-mole. Mm-hmm. We got to get more proactive. We have to be able to it's beyond human comprehension, and you need tools such that you automate these processes
mm-hmm.
and that the decisions are being made programmed by humans, but decisions are being made at machine speed, because if you don't make the decisions at machine speed, you're probably going to lose them. And so it's figuring out how to do that. And that requires, just as I stated before, is as much as we like to say that certain parts of the network need to be different to meet this mission, sure, we've got to get to standardized and configuration. Mm-hmm. And some of this, I tell you what, in my 34 years of being in this business, is I've rarely seen a technological problem. Mm-hmm. Almost every problem I've ever seen is a cultural issue related to technology. Somebody tried to apply the wrong technology to a business process versus fixing the business process and then applying the technology. And my relief, Admiral Lytle, is going to have a few of those challenges to deal with when he arrives on the board. One of the biggest ones is we're about to do a financial system transformation. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go with a shared service provider on that, which means the customizations that we've built over the last 20 years are going to have to go because we're going to do it by the service provider's book. This is not a technology issue. This is a business process and a cultural issue.
And a policy issue.
Absolutely. And nobody's going to be happy about it. But when we're done, we have a system that is capable of meeting CFO audit. And once we've revamped all of our business process to adjust to the new system, they will be much happier in the long run versus with the system that we have today. But that's going to be a big challenge.
And that's a challenge that's befuddled many at the Department of Homeland Security, which is the Coast Guard's home agency, for many years since DHS was pulled together from all of those groups. It almost sounds to me like you're advocating somewhere down the road a rethinking of how IT impacts missions and how it works with what an agency or what a service like the Coast Guard is supposed to do.
Well, mission is still always going to be key. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, we're not going to wag the tail or wag the dog. Mission's always going to be key. But as I say, I've enjoyed the benefit of being able to explain to my senior leaders and all of the rest of the flag and SES Corps, these core relationships, and that you just can't run off without thinking this through from an enterprise architecture standpoint. What are all the influences that are coming in from the rest of federal government, be it from OMB policy, DHS policy, DOD, because we have a foot in both camps. Mm-hmm. And you really have to sit down and think about this before you run off and invest in something or other. But at the same time, as a technologist, I have to know who I work for. I work for the operator, and it's my job to make sure that I'm bringing the best capability to them. But it's their job, too, to understand the limitations that I'm under and that you do need to resource it. You do need to have the people to do it. And, just throwing something out there willy-nilly will eventually fail.
Exactly. Well, Admiral, on that note, I want to thank you, sir, for your service to this country. I want to wish you Godspeed on your impending retirement. And our thanks today to the FCA Homeland Security Committee, along with FCA Homeland Security Vice President Vince Patton, for production help with today's show. Got a question about what we've discussed today? Got an answer. The conversation continues on our blog at federalnewsradio.com. Search FCEA. That's AFCEA. That's also where you can download this program and our previous shows for listening on your schedule. This program is a production of FCEA International, which is solely responsible for its content. On the web at FCEA.org. I'm Max Kakis. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time for FCEA Answers on Federal News Radio.